this evening. I invite you to, we're going to break from the norm and jump. We're going to read the passage before I talk about it. So I invite you to flip over to Matthew 12. We're going to read verses 1 to 14 and page 1482 in your pew Bibles. The only preface comment I'm going to say is that we'll be looking at Matthew for the next couple weeks, or in the next, this week, next week, as we move towards Lent. At about that time, Jesus was walking through some grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, so they began breaking off some heads of grain and eating them. But some Pharisees saw them do it and protested, "Look, your disciples are breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath." Jesus said to them, "Haven't you read in the scriptures what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He went into the house of God, and he and his companions broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that only the priests are allowed to eat. And haven't you read in the law of Moses that the priests on duty in the temple may work on the Sabbath? I tell you, there is one here who's even greater than the temple. But you would not have condemned my innocent disciples if you knew the meaning of this scripture. I want you to show mercy, not offer sacrifices. For the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath." Then Jesus went over to their synagogue, where he noticed a man with a deformed hand. The Pharisees asked Jesus, "Does the law permit a person to work by healing on the Sabbath?" They were hoping he would say yes, so they could bring charges against him. He answered, "If you had a sheep that fell into a well on the Sabbath, wouldn't you work to pull it out? Of course you would. And how much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Yes, the law permits a person to do good on the Sabbath." Then he said to the man, "Hold out your hand." So the man held out his hand, and it was restored, just like the other one. Then the Pharisees called a meeting to plot how to kill Jesus. The Gospels are full of many stories, full of parables and miracles. Fantastic, powerful, interesting stories that create opportunity to pause and consider who he is. We are separated from those stories by time, some 2,000 years, by context, by shared references. So sometimes it's hard to figure out how we can go and do likewise, to allude to Luke 10:37. Sometimes that go and do likewise isn't exactly obvious. We're like, what's the situation? What's the dynamic? How do we live out this practice? Sabbath. How do we live out Sabbath? We are, in our culture, at least in my experience, speaking from my place, well beyond this kind of text in Matthew 12 and similar passages about Sabbath, at least how Jesus deals with the Pharisees and these controversies, because not working on the Sabbath isn't a huge controversy for us in our generation, in our times. We don't have this strong regiment of not working on Sunday. If you consider Saturday and you consider Sunday as two different days, if you're just walking around the city or if you're in the mall, you wouldn't notice much of a difference. Perhaps the stores close a little bit earlier, but that is perhaps the only difference. I remember growing up, my mom used to highlight that they were not allowed to play cards on the Sabbath as the big thing for Sabbath observation. But for us, there's a great distance. We don't have that same dilemma. So how does this passage speak to us? One story from, as far as Sabbath observation, in Germany where we lived, I've probably shared this story before, Sundays the grocery stores were closed. And so we were forced to consider Sunday. We had to, on Saturday evening, consider what was in our fridge or in our cupboards to make sure that we had, and the predominant thing was milk in our fridge. It was at the time where I drank milk in my coffee. Now it'd be a simpler time where I wouldn't have to worry about that because I drink my coffee black, but that was the main thing. There's a few Sundays I remember where we got up and it was like, we don't have any milk. We'll have to make do in other ways. But Sabbath, it doesn't jar us. It doesn't cause us to think differently sometimes. And that's what Jesus invites in this passage, is to think about the purpose of Sabbath, the purpose of offering mercy and being a merciful people. So what are Jesus' words? What are his challenge? And it's beyond the challenge of don't be so harsh with the rules. It's beyond that. He's not just saying, Pharisees, you're being too legalistic. There's a deeper challenge that goes beyond that. It moves into how are you doing the work of God? How is the kingdom of heaven being made present in your lives? So to let this sum up, or to sum this up, or to move deeper in this passage, let's consider a few things, a few dynamics. And one of the first questions I'd like to ask is, what is Sabbath? And if you look at the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament, there's two sets of the Ten Commandments. There's Exodus and there's Deuteronomy. And how they deal with Sabbath is a little bit different in each of them. But this highlights the dual nature of Sabbath and its role in our lives. So Exodus 19 says, remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. And then there's a few prescriptions on how to enact that. And then verse 11 here, it gives the explanation of why Sabbath. So for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and everything in them, but on the seventh day he rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. The first dynamic of Sabbath is that God created in 6 days and rested on the seventh day. And he judges his creation. He takes a step back, if you will, and reflects on what he has just accomplished. And he declares it very good as he reflects on day six. But then he moves into this rest, this settling, this observation, taking stock of the work that he has completed. And then we have Deuteronomy 5, and there's a different nuance in here. There's a different explanation about why they must, as a people, observe Sabbath or remember the Sabbath, as in Exodus. So observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. And then verse 15, remember that you were once slaves in Egypt, but the Lord your God brought you out with a strong hand and a powerful arm. That is why the Lord your God has commanded you to rest on the Sabbath day. This highlights a different nuance, but an equally important nuance of Sabbath rest. The people, and this is, I'm alluding to Walter Brueggemann's book on Sabbath here, which is a very good book on Sabbath rest, and it's very challenging work. But he talks about how those series of years of slavery and work in Egypt, they were not allowed to rest. So as God saves his people, as he invites them to move forth into this land, he offers them what they were unable to have. He offers them rest. So these are two dynamics here. We have Exodus. It's the act of creation, God creating and taking stock of his good creation. And then Deuteronomy, this act of deliverance, this act of offering rest to his people out of his mercy, out of his love for them, out of his covenant faithfulness. So Sabbath became, for the people, this key identifying marker as they understood who they were as the people of God. They were able to rest, observe Sabbath. But how it sometimes is when you can lose sight of the purpose of what you're doing, you get so focused on the goal of resting that you lose sight of what the purpose of rest is, taking stock of creation out of God's deliverance for you. You get so focused on what the goal is that you lose sight of what the important dynamic is in Sabbath. And that's a fair critique of the Pharisees in how they viewed Sabbath. They came so focused on making sure that they didn't transgress the Sabbath, that they didn't rest in the way that God intended for them to rest. They weren't entering into his good creation. They weren't remembering his deliverance for them. So let's talk about Matthew 12 a little bit. Now we've set that in the context. So there's two controversies about Sabbath that we have in Matthew 12. And the first one starts with Jesus' disciples plucking off grain and then eating them as on the Sabbath day. And Jesus responds in two ways. And the first one says, tell a story about David and his companions eating this sacred bread that only the priests were allowed to eat. And in the background of this is David's men were so famished that they were about to die. And what he's alluding to is this idea that if death was a likely possible outcome of this situation, that you could, in these situations of situations and circumstances, you could work on the Sabbath if you needed to save your life in some way or some dynamic. So Jesus is saying his disciples are famished in the way that David was, and so they acted in a way to provide sustenance for themselves. The second, though, component is more powerful and more convincing. And to offer the background of here, in Numbers 28, 9 to 10, this is the passage Jesus has in the back of his mind, or is alluding to, is that the priests were allowed to work on the Sabbath to offer sacrifices. They sacrificed on the Sabbath, and this would be considered work. And this was allowed in the Torah of Moses, in the instructions of Moses, to work on the Sabbath. And I read the New Living Translation, and they have here, there is one who is greater, or one greater, one here who is even greater than the temple. And it's a little bit technical, but I think I want to explain this, the difference here in a little bit. Most translations have, there is something here greater than the temple. In Greek, when you're referring to a concept, you often use the neuter case. You have masculine for masculine things, feminine for feminine things, and neuter for non-specific things. It doesn't always work out in all these dynamics, but it's often the case when you're talking about an idea or concept that you use the neuter case, and that's what is here in the New Living Translation. There are some counter-arguments, but... And so what I think is going on here, what I think is highlighted in Hosea 6, by using the quote in Hosea 6:6, is that there is something greater here than offering sacrifices. The priests were allowed to not observe the law of not working to offer sacrifices. And so pulling on this, Jesus is saying there's something greater here, that being mercy, which you are unable to enact on the Sabbath day. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, quoting from Hosea 6:6. And this fits with this idea that the people were supposed to act mercifully. And it sets up this idea well, and it sets up the story which follows well when Jesus encounters the man with the withered hand. As we come to this end of this first scene, when Jesus says, I want you to show mercy and not sacrifice, we're almost looking for an application. We're looking for, well, how does this work out? Yeah, the Pharisees shouldn't have been so harsh with the disciples, but how does this function in real life? And so Jesus, as he goes to the synagogue, and presumably the Pharisees with him, he encounters this withered man with a withered hand, and it fits perfect, this opportunity to show what it means to act with mercy over sacrifice, to put into application Hosea 6:6. So the Pharisees hope to trap Jesus in this opportunity. He does this by and Jesus responds by talking about sheep, specifically a sheep that had fallen into a ditch, one who had fallen down and needed to be rescued. And there were rules as well, provisions for how you could, without technically working, lift up a sheep out of the pit on the Sabbath day. This is a concrete example of that Jesus is referring to. Or Jesus is making reference to. How does one with this man engage in mercy and not sacrifice? This concrete example right in front of Jesus. Theoretically, Jesus could come back to the synagogue tomorrow. Likely he could encounter this man then, or he could say, come back tomorrow and I will heal you. And then the controversy would be over. But this is why the story of the sheep fits so perfectly. There's rules to act mercifully to this sheep, to not allow it to suffer in the pit, to not allow it to suffer pain, anguish, frustration. The sheep would probably live to the next day, but they were able to extend mercy to the sheep. And so this is what Jesus is able to do for the man. He does not leave him in his state of suffering, his state of frustration, when there is opportunity for Jesus to heal him in this very moment, to restore him, to even do an act of new creation, an act of redemption, to live out the kingdom of heaven being made real in this man's life. He's able to extend mercy and not to be bound by sacrifice, to do good on the Sabbath, to restore, to create new out of chaos, to heal, redeem, to live out mercy on the Sabbath, because Jesus is Lord. He is Lord of the Sabbath. When I consider this passage, when I try to make sense of it, when I try to engage with it, I do experience a strong challenge from Jesus. It's not the challenge of necessarily being able to work on the Sabbath or to allow Sunday to be just a regular day. I don't think that's the main thrust of what Jesus is telling even to the Pharisees. He's saying, live out a life of mercy, a life that reflects the unfolding kingdom of heaven. Because this would be the right understanding of the purpose of Sabbath. This would be the right application of Sabbath, a good ordering, a good understanding of what God is doing in his creation, extending his redemption to all people, inviting people to live in this family where mercy is extended and withered hands are restored. God's good creation. The Pharisees, in their rigid following of Sabbath, are not able to see well. They see here, they see situations where the disciples are eating. They behold this man here. But they're not able to see what God is doing. They're not able to see the unfolding kingdom of heaven because they're not finding rest in God. This prevents them from being merciful, from being able to understand what God is doing. To understand the central message of Jesus, of mercy and not sacrifice. And I think of our lives and the busyness, the movement from one place to another, and the need for rest, the need for reflecting on God's good creation, what he is doing, experiencing the time to order ourselves around his healing, his love, and his mercy, which will then enable us to see situations, to see opportunities where we can then extend that same mercy. The challenge for me is quite strong. I've never been good at Sabbath rest. It's never been something I've been strong in. I think back from when I started college, and I seldom ever took a full Sunday day of reflection, of quiet, of sitting still into any sort of degree. There's always papers which I did not write, books which I did not read, and stuff that needed to be done. And that's continued on as I was writing my dissertation. I seldom ever let it sit on the side to order my thoughts around what God was intending for me to do. And it's the busyness of multitasking, of doing things at the same time, of having one thing on the go while you're trying to accomplish another thing that prevents me from ordering my life around what God is calling. So I read Brueggemann's book on Sabbath. That was a great challenge to sit back from the busyness and to order thoughts around God, to recognize what he is doing in creation, to recognize the healing that is present, not just in my life, but how it's being present in other people's lives. Sabbath for us is taking time to reflect on what God is doing in our lives, in the world. The other major challenge has been, and the college students will testify to that, is reading Joan Chittister's book, Wisdom Distilled from the Daily, and her chapter on holy leisure is quite powerful in the challenge of Sabbath. And she goes from Sabbath to holy leisure to contemplation. And she has this quote here, which I found particularly interesting. Contemplation is the ability to see the world around us as God sees it. contemplation is a sacred mindfulness of my holy obligation to care for the world I am in. Contemplation is awareness of God within me and in the people around me. Contemplation is taking the time to step back from the good work that we are doing in our daily interactions, in the places we find ourselves, as we work in all these different spheres of reality. God is working in our midst. He's working through us. He is creating something new out of what we labor in. He is healing out of there. But if we don't take time to sit back from the good work that he's doing in our lives, we might not be able to see how he is leading us into something else, into something new. He won't be able to speak as we fill with too many things. We won't be able to hear. Contemplation allows us to see what he is doing in our midst. It allows us to see through Sabbath rest his mercy, the mercy that he is doing in the world, the mercy he extends to us, and by extension, the mercy we as his representatives extend in the world as we partner in his new creation. The task of creation, the task of healing, the two great reasons for Sabbath. So what does Sabbath provide? It provides the opportunity to organize our lives in a way that we can see opportunities for mercy, for love. It provides us the opportunity, the eyes, to see the beautiful world that God created and the beautiful world that he invites us into as co-creators, as participants in his unfolding kingdom, the kingdom of heaven. God rescues us, and he invites us into the task of extending that rescue, that healing, that deliverance in the world. Sabbath gives us the opportunity to rest and to reflect and to order it and to understand how God is moving. So we seek to take moments to enact practices, to pause into our lives, to be still before God, to recognize his new creation, to experience that healing, and then to participate in extending that healing in the world. It allows us to make sense of who God is and how he is leading us. So the challenge of Sabbath might not be to, or the challenge of Sabbath is to figure out practices, moments, opportunities, pauses, to listen, to sit quietly before God, to participate in moments of rest, that we may rest in him, and to continue to become his image and his likeness, to participate with him in creation, participate with him in healing and deliverance. Sabbath. Dawned on me as I was thinking about the table and how I often talk about the table. I often say, sit quietly, listen to how the Holy Spirit is speaking to you, what he might be saying. And sometimes you go from week to week and you use similar phrases, similar ideas. And it dawned on me that that is not an empty phrase. As we prepare ourselves for the table, we invite you to sit quiet in a moment of rest, to order your thoughts, your lives before God and allow him to speak. We contemplate what he is saying to us. So as we go from this place, we may be able to see his new creation unfolding in our midst, to see the way he invites us to participate in the healing and the deliverance of his word. It's a small moment, perhaps only a minute or two, but it's a sign of the greater need for us to pause for moments to rest in God as we seek to encounter him. So I invite you tonight, as every week, to sit and listen to how the Spirit might be speaking to you, how he might be inviting you into his new creation, into his mercy and healing. And come, participate in the bread, participate in the cup, the symbol of his great mercy to us, the great mercy that extends to all creation that he invites us to participate in as his redeemers. his co-workers, his laborers, his people. The worship team will come forward and then lead us in songs that are to shape our prayers, our response, our longings for the future that is made possible because of Jesus. If you need to move about, if you need to find a quiet place, we invite you to do so. If you need somebody to pray with, Janelle, who led us in community prayer, I'd be happy to pray with your bread is gluten-free and lactose-free. So as far as possible, we're all able to participate from the same loaf. So I invite you this evening to come and experience the rest of God, the new creation of God, the healing of God.